From Raleigh, North Carolina, it's The Leftovers with Jay and Jack, a podcast dedicated to HBO's The Leftovers. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Hi, and welcome to The Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike. My name is Jay.
My name is Mike.
And I'm Jack.
And welcome to the show. Yes, believe it or not, it's been like a year and 8 months. Like how it's been forever. I feel like since
it
Leftovers.
Hasn't been
on.
It hasn't been
8 months. It was fall of 2015. Was the Leftovers was last on?
No, it was 2016, wasn't it?
No.
It was fall of 2015. So, almost as if this podcast temporarily disappeared from the feed without a
wow.
trace.
Wow. I think it did.
And in between, in that time, we have added another podcaster to this podcast, none other than Mike Bloom.
Someone's got to pick up the slack that Jay brings to each podcast.
If we want to talk about picking up the slack, Jack hasn't even seen the trailer, not to blow up his spot.
What is the point? I watched the trailer for season two.
Trailer's pretty descriptive.
No, hold on a second. 1,000 times, and it starts off with some cave woman coming out of a cave, pregnant cave woman. And I'm like going, what the heck is this? This isn't Texas.
Well, it was. Technically, it was.
But, you know.
Prehistoric Texas.
There were a lot of cave women in Texas.
But yes, excited to come back after, you know, in my opinion, one of the best seasons of a TV show ever, season two of Leftovers. And really excited to have Mike Bloom of Westworld with Jay, Jack, and Mike and like a million other podcasts fame, including another one going into Jay and Jack, network feed. World, a new Fargo
really
podcast, Mike.
Yeah, I'm happy to throw another podcast on the Bobby.
are you just going like Fargo with? Oh, we were actually. I think we were talking about this on our Hangout the other day. What's the billing?
Jay's going to insist it says Jeremiah Mike.
The billing? Okay. Is it Mike Jeremiah? Jeremiah Mike.
I'm not entirely sure. You know, I think that'll be sort of a compromise between Jeremiah and I. We're much like the Coen brothers of the original Fargo source material in that, you know, we might just choose to go by one name together, bill equal billing, no matter what the order may be. But I'm really excited, guys, because I have a nice double dose of Carrie Coon coming up in the next week. Because for those of you that might
That's
not
right.
know, not only is Carrie Coon a fantastic part of The Leftovers, but she's also now a part of this third season cast of Fargo.
Oh.
So I'm thrilled. She's one of like the most underrated actresses of our generation, in my opinion. Hopefully I'm not sounding too hyperbolic with that. So I'm happy to be able to really get fully immersed in Carrie Coon, because who knows, after 10 weeks, who knows when we're going to see her again, hopefully in some sort of project sometime after that.
That's a good point.
She's outstanding in season two. Actually, season one.
Yeah, the whole time on The Leftovers. But yes,
highlight of season one, in my opinion. Yeah,
I would agree that season one was fairly drab and dreary, but
I think her episode's the one that got me sold on the show, though, season one.
You ready for my first ever Leftovers branded hot take?
Oh, okay. All right.
Because I thought about this because I've been rewatching the episodes because I guess sort of my Leftover story is that I binged the first season and most of the second season during that like summer fall 2015 period, and I was able to watch the season two finale live, so I caught up just in time.
Nice.
But I'm rewatching these episodes and listening to the podcast so I can be as well versed as possible. And the problem always with this show, you just talked about it, Jay, with the first season, is like, how do you introduce this show to someone? Because the first few episodes especially are pretty bleak and a little aimless in comparison of narrative to the other episodes. I would say if you're showing The Leftovers to somebody to get them into the show, do not show them the first episode. Show them season one, episode 9, The Garveys at Their Best, the prequel episode, so that you get some insight as to what the characters are. It's not completely drab going in on the way. And then everything just sort of segues smoothly into the first episode. It might be a little weird. Some purists might say that you're taking things totally out of context, but I think that's an episode that you want to show people early on to say, you know, if you're tracking things chronologically, this is where these people came from and this is where they are now.
So I actually take it a whole different direction. I say skip season one, watch season two, and then go back and watch season. And people get, how can you tell people to do that?
This
because you tell people to watch The Leftovers, they watch season one, they go, this show's too depressing. I can't watch it.
Well, that's why I like Mike's take on it here, his hot take. Is that your new branded thing for
Mike's hot take?
Mike's hot take.
Mike's hot take of the week.
You gotta get like a drum roll.
It's kind of like with Star Wars, they have the machete order, where it's, you know, you go episodes 4, 5, then back to 2, 3, 6, and then I think they say just skip episode 1 altogether.
Yeah, there's some versions that say skip episode 1, there's some that say include it.
What if you're old like me and you had no choice?
But for a lot of Leftovers doesn't, the first couple seasons so far hasn't had a gigantic audience by any means, so a lot of people are still coming into it. So when Jack, you're talking about like what you suggest to people, maybe Mike's hot take of doing episode 9, which is
if there's some kind of sound effect that goes with the hot take, I will be on board. If it's just Mike's hot take. I'm just not buying it. I want
like some like flame broiled sizzling sound effects,
like bacon or something.
I don't agree with Jack. I don't think you just skip season one because
I agree with Jack.
If you because season two is amazing, but you do want to have some context of the characters, the Garveys that are, you know, a big part of season two. And where it goes from there.
But the ones that are important in season two are there. Season one, they're still there in season two.
Yeah, but I feel like you need the backstory a little bit. So I like episode 9.
It's a completely 1,
2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10. Then.
You don't have the creepy twins.
You don't find them creepy. They're just kind of just boring.
I don't think they were creepy. I mean, here's maybe another hot take. All the teenagers in Mapleton, New York were assholes. Bona fide assholes. And we're not talking like teenage tomfoolery mischievousness. You know, we're talking like full-on sociopaths locking kids in fridges just for fun. You know, autoerotic asphyxiation. I did not have that experience in high school. I don't know if you guys did. You can imagine the departure certainly left a remnant upon our youths in terms of how they face the world. But then you're going a little over the top there. So again, I feel like episode 9, seeing Jill at least be relatively happy and a relatively normal teenager by societal standards is a good way to sort of shift into the post-departure Jill, who is basically like really weird version of Daria.
Well, and that's kind of what was
did,
nice.
Did she ever smile? Did she smile in season one? It's been so long since I've seen it.
It's usually those mischievous smiles when her and Amy were screwing with the twins, for example, or like, you know, her mouthing off to her father.
Which was all the time.
But that's where in season two.
And what's the deal with the dogs?
But in season two, where they kind of found this sanctuary, if you will, and there was less of because season one, it's showing you the departure and kind of the breakdown of society, and that's why I think season two kind of got out of that a little bit. But as somebody that just binged it, Mike, what was your thoughts on season two? Because from my perspective, like, this is just an amazing, amazing piece of television.
Yeah, so where I actually am currently in my season two rewatch, right before we came on here, I was finishing up the season two episode 6, Lens, and that really fantastic conversation between Nora and Erica Murphy in the home. Just such good acting. I mean, I do completely agree. When you binge things all in a row, you sort of get things muddled. That's why I'm actually usually not a fan of binging a bunch of episodes in a row. Usually I'm the more moderate one to sort of save like one or two episodes per week. But every episode this season is just a knockout. You know, even the best seasons of drama or comedy on TV, you could say like, well, that episode's pretty weak, or we could have done without that episode. But it really does feel like every single episode in season two is so well plotted, so well acted, so well directed, so well musically, both from a score perspective and those rollicking tunes of old and new that they decide to put on, that it honestly feels like there is no dead weight in that regard. And that makes me really excited for season three, because, you know that they know they have a final season, they agreed to it, and they have only 8 episodes, I don't think there's going to be any fat at all for them to trim. It's going to be nothing but nice, pure meat for us to gnaw on.
Yeah, only 8 episodes, and yeah, and you know, at the end of season 2, really into season 2, if they didn't like renew it for this final season, you could have been satisfied with it, you know? Like in terms
that's
of where
why,
it ended.
That's why I say they should have Constanza and said, "I'm good. I'm out of here." There's so much pressure on this season.
But here's the thing, Jack. So what if it's amazing? Do we take back what now this,
I will,
this thing
I will
that
take
repeated
that,
for a
I
year
will
and a
take
half?
That, I will take that back. But if it's not amazing, I'm going to say, I told you. Well, you're putting a lot of pressure on yourself.
To Mike's point, though, it's only 8 episodes. And any writer worth their, you know...
Oh, now you're calling out the writers.
I mean, it's Damon Lindelof. I trust Damon Lindelof.
And I can't wait for that interview with Damon Lindelof.
We should probably get to that. But I trust him. And based on the trailer, and we can talk about this, dig into this. It seems
I was watching it while you guys were talking. So is it the one where Kevin Garvey's on a plane and gets dragged off?
No, those are because
he won't give up his seat.
And he says,
just kill me, something like that.
No, that's a different video, Jack. Different video.
Oh, I swear to God, that said leftover. I searched leftovers, and that's what came. Some poor guy's getting dragged off a plane because he won't give up his seat.
Anyway,
seriousness, there are actually, I was confused at first, Jack, because there are 2 trailers. There's one that's like the official trailer and one that in binging the show, like I constantly watch it as what they put on before each episode on like HBO Now, which is what I have. And that latter one has them getting on the plane, presumably to go to Australia. So that I was with you, Jack, until you made that very timely reference.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that's what, because I was sold.
You know, what's funny though is
I really wanted to see what happened to Kevin.
Would you say you were oversold, Jack, oversold on that trailer?
yeah, there you go. But then I was looking at the guy. I said, "That doesn't look like Kevin Garvey's, you know, abs." So
Justin Theroux.
Yeah. We're kind of similar.
You know. But it's funny, is like this could be like Aladdin, where it's a great movie, but you go back and watch it, and all the '90s references that were thrown in by Robin Williams don't hold up as well. For maybe people that go back and listen to this podcast, if they're catching up on the show, they'll be like, "What the heck reference is this? I don't get it.
He's drunk again."
So it seems in the trailer, because it's kind of the PA of the airline attendant kind of doing the drill, but instead it's kind of talking about, it seems like we've had the rapture, now we're having the flood that's going to wipe out mostly everybody, and is Australia going to be the only land mass that survives? Or we're having the Noah's Ark season.
It all starts with Australia.
What's your take on that, Mike?
Yeah, it's strange because both trailers seem really focused on this idea. They've done a little bit of a time jump as well. They're now 7 years after the departure, which I think puts it at what? Like 2018 was the departure in 2011, maybe? I might be incorrect with that. Yeah. So there's now this other big event coming. And it is tough, you were just talking about it, to sort of see how do you move on from the second season. And it's clear from at least the third season's trailer that they're just going to keep piling on more of the same, which we love. But I mean, and again, you know, at this point, people who didn't want to be spoiled about the trailer should have probably jumped off by now. But just in case, make your leave. We'll come back after the first episode and talk about it. But
I don't think it matters, because, again, the trailer didn't show us anything last year.
I mean, I have 2 counts in the trailers of Kevin dying, of him getting put underwater. So it seems like we're going back to that hotel at least 2 more times. I want to get a counter of if Kevin Garvey or a cat will have more lies by the end of The Leftovers. he's on his third, right?
I think the women like the Kevin Garvey hotel scenes too.
You just have him constantly choose an outfit over and over again, standing shirtless in his closet.
It comes out of the bathtub, so I think
that one in particular.
I just guess.
Kevin Garvey coming out of the bathtub. That's the best.
Also, one other thing to mention from the trailer, I guess beards have now caught on in the world of The Leftovers. I don't know if you noticed this, Jay, but we have a beard on Kevin, a beard on Matt, a beard on John Murphy. We haven't seen Tommy. I'm assuming he has a beard as well. You have to assume that everyone has just started to don these biblical-esque facial hair in preparation for what's to come with the Fly.
Well, it's and the thing is like Kevin
Garvey
has a really good
one. I saw
it's a really good beard. Like it's good beard. Like as somebody that's tried to grow.
Yeah, you're kind of you're like patchy.
I'm not patchy, but it's not like it's thick.
It's
like Kevin Garvey's.
It's kind of disgusting. Look on the side of your cheek right there.
What?
The other side. It's kind of like a pat. It doesn't grow there.
It does. It's
it
there.
Looks like
it's
my
just,
head. There.
You know what? Whatever. I'm turning off the camera now. Enough of your criticisms of me.
It's not criticism. It's just putting out facts.
If it's 2018, like you said, the 7 years, then beards are in their timeline as well.
But you never know. I mean, don't they say that like things that catch on in one area, like they always say that Canada, for example, and no offense to our Canadian listeners out there, but some say that like Canada's like 5 years behind the trends of the United States. Who knows how far behind Australia is? You know, they still might be doing things back that were popular in like 2014. You know, we might see a lot of dabbing in Australia in season 3 of The Leftovers.
It's going to be 5 years before Canada's great again.
Lord. Maybe the flood is related to the current events of the world. Who knows?
hey, I still say that we're going to find out at the end of the show, that the people that departed were the people we're seeing, not the people that we don't see. Like, what's her name? Nora's family. Well, like Nora's family didn't depart, Nora departs. So that's why I'm hoping they go with it this year. I kind of had that theory midway through last season, I think, something like that.
I think it's definitely
it's not as good as the gutter cleaning, but it's
And who knows? We'll see how much beardy gutter cleaning happens. Kevin's a settled down man, so who knows? But it's on HBO. You know, they'd love to string up a man in the stockades last season and show flap and peen, so maybe we'll see more of that. So what I will say in response to that is that, you know, in preseason press before this, Carrie Coon did say, hey, this ending is really satisfying and ties up a lot of loose ends and people will enjoy it, which is kind of weird. You know, in a post-Lost, post-How I Met Your Mother world, I do feel like a lot of TV shows need to say in their final season, like, no, enjoy the ending, don't worry, though I know that sometimes you just sort of want to let the mystery be in a way and let the viewers think what they want to think. But I feel like using that logic, that theory is awesome. Definitely a game changer in terms of storytelling, but that raises so many questions. The big one that I would have is you have this really mystical element near the end of the first season and throughout the second season of some men or male characters on the show being able to see dead people or spirits, particular Kevin and Patty. That's the big, yep, you know, matchup, yeah, of season two. But even in season one, you have, you know, Dean, the random dog shooting guy, talking to someone. Kevin Sr. obviously had his own time talking to voices. So you'd have to wonder, like, if that's the case, if these are the people that are departed and they're in some sort of purgatory or in some sort of nether world, we don't exactly know. How does that incorporate into it? Are we saying that, like, Dean is, you know, an angel, an archangel that's able to ferry between the two different planes of existence? You know, when Kevin killed Patty, did he actually send Patty back to live on Earth? That it just raises, it's a cool theory, but it raises way too many questions.
Well, was it Dean, right? Every time he kills a dog, an angel gets his wings.
Well, it's funny because I recently didn't have the internet, and so I had to rely on this ancient technology called Blu-rays for my entertainment. So I put in the Inception Blu-ray. I haven't seen Inception in forever. And the killing one to go back into maybe the real world reminded me of how in Inception, if they kill you in the dream, you wake up. But I'm with Mike on that, though. Like, it's almost where if a show is ending, like pulling one of those kind of trick ending type things just isn't going to land well. So if you're saying they were really the departed the whole time, is almost as bad as like they were dead the whole time.
No, I disagree. You could have it like there's 8 episodes. You could have the 7th episode where we realize that's what's happened, and then that whole episode is seeing how Nora's family reacts to Nora not being there, and then you wrap that whole thing up, and then if it's the end of the world type thing,
that sounds exhausting.
How do you explain like Mike said earlier? How many times is does a cat get more lives than Kevin Garvey? I mean, how many times is that guy? He should be dead.
So you're taking like just one person that we kind of have to suspend disbelief in and do it to everybody.
A lot of people have survived. How do you explain
But that was something special about the town was his ability to die and come back again. Like, will he still have that? I guess if Australia maybe is some type of, you know, sister place that has the same properties or whatever.
It's a sister place.
Okay, going back to Lost, there was an episode SOS where she went to Australia. Oh my God, it's all coming together.
Yeah. And ironically enough, the season 3 trailer uses ABBA's SOS as the background music, so it all connects.
Wouldn't it be.
You know your mom doesn't like ABBA?
She said
she hated it. I go, who hates ABBA?
ABBA's like cotton candy. Like, it's just
people. But nobody hates it. I mean, you can say, okay, I don't care for that music. She goes, I hate ABBA.
I can see people hating ABBA. But let's get back on topic here. Could you say that maybe with the big twist reveal is that The Leftovers is also within Lost's multiverse? Theories like with Pixar, where they kind of show how it's all in the same universe or something like that, where, you know, with the connections now with Australia being this place of importance.
Do they want to go down that road, though? Because that's kind of
You can have this one where they're really the departed, not the other people. But I'm bringing up one where it's all possibly in the same universe.
You're trying to say it's, you know, maybe like Lost. They can't go down the same road as Lost.
The departure takes place. When did Flight 815 crash? Like 2004, right?
Wouldn't there
be like a news clip, like a talking head being like, oh, all these people disappeared. More people than Flight 815 of Oceanic Airlines 7 years ago. Remember that?
You remember that flight.
I don't know. It's just by that point, it'd be like old news. Nobody really cares about it anymore. It's possible. I'm just saying it's possible.
I'm just saying they shouldn't go down the Lost Road because Lindelof.
They're not going down the Lost Road. It's one of those nice little
aside where it could
possibly exist within the same universe. That's all. I'm just saying. Throwing it out there.
The key is a hotel, right?
So do we think there is going to be a flood and only the Garveys survive?
I don't think only the Garveys will survive. I think it's really interesting that you talked about how the ending of season 2 could function as a serious finale. Mm-hmm. And I love that final shot, that sort of tracking shot of Kevin in his home with essentially the main cast around him.
Yep.
And that doesn't include just the Garveys.
With a wound to the gut where he's just bleeding.
Yeah.
Yet he still survives.
But I mean, looking at the casting for season 3, it looks like, and again, we have no idea. It's going to be another matter of geography and how they might change from Texas to Australia and who goes and who stays. But it seems like the Murphys are along for the ride this season as well, which you might not expect, considering that I think you would think that initially their story would get wrapped up, unfortunately, in a little bit of a bittersweet context, in that Evie was a member of the GR. Not sure how she'll change from here on out. But you'd have to imagine that they're going to be involved in some capacity as well. It will be interesting to see. You know, I don't think any of these characters as outside of Patty have died on the show. Again, with the exception of Kevin, Teflon Kevin, no main characters have been killed off so far, which is pretty staggering. You have to wonder if Lost is going, or if Leftovers is going to go the route of Lost and start, you know, slaughtering people by the masses, or if they're really going to keep this group close-knit and together if and when this impending flood comes.
That's a good call-out, you know, that this show hasn't killed off a major character that we, like, love. Which is it's surprising, especially like the modern in this golden era of television.
You didn't love Patty?
Well, but Patty's kind of like an antagonist versus.
And you I feel like we love Patty more when she was getting under Kevin's skin as this anathema of a spirit. You know, you didn't. She had a few fun scenes when she was alive, but I feel like she really came more alive when she functioned in the afterlife instead of when she was in this plane of existence.
So But yeah, so no major character has been killed off, which in the golden era of television, it seems to be a trope that's done a lot, like where you kill off somebody that you love and it's very emotional, everybody cries, and Lost was kind of one of the earlier people that did that, and you know, Joss Whedon loves killing, you know, main characters too, so it's surprising that it hasn't happened yet. So
or has it happened? They've been dead the whole time. Have they been dead the whole time? Did we find that out? So how can you kill people who are already dead?
Listen, I don't want to be left out
on the Lost analogies.
One of the other holes I'll poke in your theory, Jack. Do they really want to dedicate an episode to Nora's asshole of a husband, Sebastian Arcalus, Doug, who cheated on her with the kindergarten teacher?
Yeah, because Doug needs some redemption.
I do have a question about that, though. Do you think we're going to see any season one characters who weren't in season two come back? Are we going to see, like, Amy make her return, or the twins that we hated so much, or even Dean? Do you think there's a chance, or do you think we're just, like, leaving Mapleton be?
Maybe the drowning, maybe the flood is just the two twins in a pool, and they drowned. What do you think?
Honestly, what I love about season two is it kind of did shed some of the excess weight of characters that weren't, you know, very good, I think. So I'd be okay if they didn't.
Knock on the actors, but their roles, it's kind of like, I don't need to see these people.
Because, like, Dean was just weird, like, that never really paid off, did it? Right?
No, I mean, he sort of came in, he helped Kevin get Patty during one of his blackouts, yeah. They had a big brouhaha. Dean revealed that maybe he had his own passenger that he was talking to, yep. And then he left, and that's the last we saw of him. Same sort of weird unresolved thing with Amy, where, you know, Jill accused Amy, did you have sex with my father? And she got angry and walked out of the house in a huff. So maybe they're using that as a metaphor that, like, not all characters have perfect endings, but it is very unresolved.
Hmm. Yeah. I'd be okay if we just leave that unresolved, personally. Personally,
which character?
The like season one characters, like Dean, and like I'm fine. Like I didn't. Season two was amazing. I didn't need them in season two for it to be amazing. So I'm okay.
Well, I think
if we just leave them
Scott
behind
Glenn.
In Mapleton.
I think we're gonna see more of the Kevin Garvey Sr.
Oh, definitely. Oh, that's where he went.
Yeah, he went to Australia. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
But it's 7 years later. How old is he?
I feel like Kevin Sr. is a guy who, like, goes gray early. Like, I feel like he could feasibly be in, like, his 60s, 70s. Okay. 7 years later, he's not, like, decrepit. Hell, he was, like, a police chief before the departure happened. So you have to imagine that he was at least a pretty good age, a sustainable age to boot.
Yeah.
He was born in 1941. Scott Glenn.
Plus, so. I mean, if he, you know, lives that, he seems like he's like living off the land, that holistic lifestyle.
It's plus, he was crunchy. The first man in space, so there you go.
Plus, he was cleaning the gutters with the mayor, who seemed significantly younger than him back in season one.
Oh, I forgot about that. Yeah.
So
that's another season one character I could do without. I was not a fan of the no nonsense mayor.
Yeah, she was. I didn't like her either.
Agreed. Agreed. So if there is a death count this season, or do you think they go the opposite route where it's kind of happy endings for everybody that we care about?
It was strange that season two almost ended like that, just because the show, even though it brightened a bit in season two, was more so about like the harshness that can come with the day-to-day struggle. I mean, the big question is, are we going to get our Matt Jameson episode, our requisite Matt Jameson episode where everything wrong happens to him, but he still ends up coming out okay?
Or does it finally catch up with him and he dies a miserable death?
Wow.
What? Is that too dark?
That's a character everybody loves. You want to kill him off?
I know. But he is kind of the John Locke of this show.
No, well, he's not John Locke, because John Locke believed he was something else. Matt just is a nice guy. Right? Am I right?
Am I right or am I right?
Cares for his wife, does the same thing every day.
Who's now, she's also now another factor. She's now completely alive, kicking, fancy free. So, Jack, you must be so happy now they're finally utilizing Janelle Maloney's talents.
Good. That drove me crazy all the time. I go,
oh, I've been listening to the podcast. I am well aware of your anger about having her on the bill.
She's a great actress. Like I said, I go, I could do her role.
But in all fairness, I mean, it's a pretty sweet gig, from an actor's perspective.
There better be some payoff because
you're getting SAG credits. You're getting paid.
I don't know. I've been listening to The West Wing Weekly, which is an episodic coverage of The West Wing by one of the former cast members and a big devotee. Yeah, yep. They had an interview with Janelle Maloney in season one, and she actually seemed a little saucy about the fact that she was playing a part where she essentially just had to sit there and do nothing the entire time. She's like, oh, I was grateful when I had a role back in the day where I actually talked and walked around.
Ooh.
Oh, so she was on my
side.
She's
angry. Yeah, she's angry too,
Jack. Yeah, she was on your side, Jack.
Yeah, I agree. Again, you could have got anybody to play that part, though.
But now she's, you know, she's awake, so.
Okay, well, she better not go back to sleep. Because
I don't know. The big question, though, is that in the episode I just watched, Lens, Nora gets a call from this woman being like, you have been, you know, be visited by the spirit of Azrael, and you will cause chaos upon everyone you encounter. And you have to wonder if that is a true thing. Is it affecting her and her brother as well? Which is, again, why Matt just has the worst luck or encounters the worst people in the world. And if so, should Mary have stayed catatonic? Because now I sort of fear for her. Now that she's alive, she's going to, like, walk off a cliff or something in Australia in the middle of the outback.
Is that better, though, than being catatonic? Like, at least she can like, okay, at least now her story is resolved, I guess, than just...
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's true. Again, which wouldn't be a reason to kill her off if they decided to take that choice. Which, again, would be horrible for this man. He's like, great, finally got my wife back in a cognitive state. I have my child, and she's gone. Poor man.
Maybe the writers listened to that episode of the West Wing podcast and heard her complain. He's like, all right, we know how to deal with you. Like Joey on Friends.
Yeah. Two lines and then boom.
Boom.
Like just like the Segway owner, the person that owns Segway. He died running over cliff.
I know, but that's not funny because
it's
real
really
life.
Morbid. Yeah. Sorry, I took it really dark, guys. It's my fault. I was season one leftovers.
Season one podcast. Way to go, Jay. All right, we start with this pregnant woman who's a cave woman.
Any weird stuff like that this season? Like just like go 15,000 years BC or something.
Has to be.
Do you think, like any weird open like that?
I don't know about the weird open. I mean, you have to wonder. They sort of opened Pandora's box in a way, right, with season two. But not only with that opening, but as you said before, completely relocating them to another setting and just abandoning characters. I feel like now that they're able to do that, I feel like they have to keep doing it, right? Yeah. They can't really settle back into the norm. So you have to wonder, are they going to go for another big opening? Maybe the plane trip is going to be that opening. And then we do sort of like a media res. We flash back sort of like what happened in season two to like, how did they end up getting there? I could totally imagine that. Or it could be something completely bonkers in the year like 3015 after the flood took place and they rebuilt society.
Yeah, because like episode one just followed the Murphys. We didn't even really see the Garveys, only kind of in passing towards the end of episode one. So you had the, you know, 15,000 years BC, and then you had following the Murphys, and then we didn't even see the Garveys kind of move in until the end of that episode, and it was through the perspective of the Murphys.
Well, luckily, they in season two, they had Regina King, and they didn't just have her sit there. They had a great actress who said, okay, we're going to have you do something.
They did a little bit, though. They said, okay, you can do something, but you can't be able to hear. So they're still trying to, get these great actors and say, we're going to throw little challenges onto you. Little, like, double dare, little physical challenges.
We've had a double dare reference on this episode. That's
something in season
two. When I know we're doing it right. But yeah, so I hope it follows the same. If there's only three seasons, there's no reason to kind of type or to kind of go the easy route. They can do whatever they want, and I hope it's just as out of left field as season two was. I think that's what really made that season really special.
What if the opening is them in the plane? Going to Australia, there's some turbulence, and then they cut to Desmond in the hatch. And they just go, just kidding. Would that be funny? No.
You were complaining about the twist earlier.
Well, what? No, but what if it was? It showed Desmond, but then it panned out to show that that was on the screen, playing on the plane as they flew safe to Australia.
Even better.
That would be actually. I would give it a full standing ovation if they opened like that.
There you go. That would show some guts.
Oh, that'd be amazing. Oh, now I hope they do that. I know that like HBO and Disney are probably competing. Media moguls, but
you figure Lindelof would have that sense of humor that he would do that,
yeah,
just to mess with the fans, show the plane, and then like Mike said, but then you're like, what are they doing? Then you realize, oh, they're just watching an episode of Lost. Okay,
Planeception, a plane within a plane.
Yeah, there you go. Kind of like an airplane where they're showing the plane a movie airport where the planes are crashing.
Oh yeah.
But hopes and thoughts here for the last season. What are kind of your guys' hopes for the show? Jack wants them all to be dead the whole time, or all to be departed.
They don't have to be dead because they departed. They're just in another dimension.
Okay. So he wants an M. Night Shyamalan twist. That's his hopes and desires. Mike, what's your hopes?
To be honest, my hopes is that people start watching the show.
Just in time for it to end.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't matter. Like, it's not.
It does matter. It needs to get recognition. It needs to get some.
But it will. It'll be one of those shows that.
Who won an Emmy on this show?
No, in a universe where The Wire did not win any Emmys, I think it's totally in the realm of possibilities that The Leftovers goes winless or even nominationless at the Emmys.
Yep.
It's crazy.
What I will say for something that I hope to see is actually in reference to a character we have not talked about this entire podcast. I want to see Liv Tyler as Meg get her comeuppance in some way, shape, or form.
Yes.
It's really fun rewatching these episodes because I think watching it at the time, especially the second season, you're like, how the hell did Meg become a GR leader? You know, was it just sort of everyone else was away and she stepped up to it? But even from the beginning, you can tell that when she gets into the GR, she's a little different.
Yeah.
Like she was always seeking violent retribution while she's an initiate in that program, instead of everyone else who really practices sort of nonviolent aggression, allows people to take out their aggressions upon them. You know, she was the one that helped plan this big maneuver of, you know, let's blow a hole in the bridge so people can infiltrate the town at the end of season two. So she kind of is, in a way, the big bad of season three. I don't know if she'll follow them to Australia, but if she does, I think it would be really fun for her to get her comeuppance.
Yeah, I agree. That would be awesome.
She dies.
But again, that's another like bad. Like anybody that we would care, like her death, I think would be okay. She had it coming. No, I mean that's just how I would think about that, but. I think that's a really good call out. In terms of my hopes for this season is I hope that Kevin Garvey finds peace. And that's what I loved about the end of season two, where it seems like he came home and his family was there, his like extended family and his friends, and it seemed like Kevin Garvey had peace. I would guess it's not so much the case in season three.
My hope would be
the end of season two, I thought, was just a perfect end to the show, possibly. It's probably, you know, naive of me to hope that it's a similar type satisfying ending
the way season two ended. If the show had ended there, I would have thought Kevin Garvey, my opinion, would have been he died with his family around him.
Because that's what you say to everything. Again, you're just M. Night
Shyamalan. He was dead the whole time. He had a gunshot wound. He laid there for hours. You don't survive a gunshot wound laying there for hours.
It'll be interesting, though, tracking where Kevin goes from here, because like you said, Jay, he is in a very peaceful place. And again, if from what we're to interpolate from the trailer, it looks like he has a very large role, maybe a savior-like role to play in what's impending. And so maybe he's sort of like at peace with his situation and he sort of gets pulled out of that comfort to say like, okay, you have an important role now. This is what you need to do. So he has leadership foisted upon him even when he doesn't want it, which might again bring up some more problems. I like peaceful Garvey much more than yelling F-bombs all the time, screaming at children.
Is he with Lori or is he gonna be with Nora?
No, he's definitely with Nora. The question is, you know, will Lori and Tommy, if that family goes to Australia, do you think Lori and Tommy follow him there? You know, do you think they're going to hang out in Jarden? We're not entirely sure
at
this point.
Lori has to because she's a pain. That's her whole role is just to be the troublemaker.
But the thing is, like, it's very similar if it is this Noah arc, if you will.
That joke was dead the whole time.
That was worse.
Well, you can't follow a bad joke.
But, you know, Noah kind of had his responsibilities kind of thrown upon him. Like, he didn't ask, you know, to be... He was just kind of, like, given these orders to follow.
Two of everyone, two?
So it is will he follow a similar storyline or a similar type story arc or character arc where, you know, his voices, whoever talks to him, gives him direction on what he has to do to possibly save what will be left of humanity. I mean, could be. We'll see.
Does he see Patty again?
That's a good question. Or if he does he see her in a different light? Because you'd assume that he ostensibly killed that part of her that was sort of haunting him and singing "Never Gonna Give You Up" rather maniacally to him. You have to wonder if maybe there's another form of Patty that we're not seeing. I mean, when he killed her in that well, she turned into a child for a bit. So maybe there's other forms that she can take
And he killed that Patty too.
Yeah.
That was a great scene, by the way.
It was. Again, season two. Amazing.
I haven't gotten back to International Assassin in my rewatch yet, but I'm super excited about it because it feels like even just like a dissertation on philosophy and the afterlife packed into like an hour long show. It's an amazing episode of television.
I agree.
Yeah, I agree.
In that episode, and I think that was the one that was written by Carlton Cuse's son. It was a really just perfect.
It was this close to being on the podcast.
Lostian show. All right. Any final thoughts here for our season three preview cast?
I mean, the fun thing about The Leftovers is that we're making all these predictions and hopes and wants now, and The Leftovers is such a creatively endeavored show that it could just throw all those out the window and go in a completely new direction, and we're still going to be along for the ride. Yeah. I think it was a good show, a pretty good show in season one, depending on the episode you would watch, got fantastic in season two. I have full confidence that they will deliver in season three with so much time and, you know, so little episodes to tell a story in. I'm really excited for how things are going to go. And I'm so excited and flattered to be joining you guys as well for the final season. I love listening to you guys cover The Leftovers. And, you know, this and Westworld are probably the closest we're going to get to Lost being back on our screens anytime soon. So I'm happy to be along with the ride for you for both.
Yeah. We're happy to have you. It keeps Jay on his toes.
Or, you know, at least it keeps the they're all dead theories at bay. Just enough to keep those at bay.
They don't have
to. Now it's two against one instead of one on one.
We will be discussing it all season long. We're actually doing a special live Leftovers podcast. The second episode? Is that that's probably when it'll be, right?
Yeah, it
or no,
be third.
Third.
No, it's got to be the third because...
May 6th.
The
third episode.
This week is the...
The 16th?
It's May 7th, so it's the fourth episode. The halfway point.
Oh, it's traditionally
halfway point of the final season.
It's a filler episode.
That will be fun to live broadcast from our home here, Studio West 2. We'll be having our podcast get together. If anybody's interested in joining that, you can feel free to check out the information on our Facebook at facebook.com/group/JayandJackGroup. Mike will be here. Jack will be here some of the time. He has to work on Saturday, unfortunately. It'll be a big, fun weekend, and we'll close it out with a live Leftovers with Jay, Jack, and Mike. If anybody wants to give feedback, the number is 385-309-0311.
Call anytime.
Once again, it's 385-309-0311. Colony Time with your questions, comments, and
freeze
or theories.
Did ever?
I think just you, Action Jackson.
Oh, I just froze. Okay. Yeah.
You can also,
you guys look frozen to me.
Send an email to lostpodcast@gmail.com.
It's
lostpodcast@gmail.com. So after the first episode,
why didn't we ever get a new?
We might have, but I can't find it. Actually, you've been listening to the old podcast, Mike.
No, I think we used the Lost Podcast. Did we?
No, you changed the number in the beginning of the second season.
Yes, the number changed. Well,
we lost the number.
The 206.
Yeah, you lost the number, so you changed
and
it.
The guy wouldn't give it back, right?
Yeah, whatever. It's not a big deal. We got our own number now. It's ours. It can't be taken away.
I love that number.
Well, you could have, you know, stepped up.
I offered $5.
And Ash, this actually is a patron's choice show, and for we are going to be putting this on our leftovers feed as well as our patron's choice, but generally this is an exclusive for our patrons that contribute $5 or more a month, and this is the topic that they chose for this month. But if you'd like to become a patron today and contribute whatever you can, there's a bunch of different perks along the way. You can check that all out on patreon.com/jandjack. That's patreon.com/jandjack. Or go to jandjack.com and click on the Become a Link to become a patron today. We have a full list of all of our patrons that we thank on that website. As well, I want to thank Tack from Tokyo, Eckhart Richter, and Molly the Millennial for their contributions especially. That will do it for this show.
You shop Amazon?
All right, Jack, give the spiel.
It's amazon.com/JandJack.
No, it's JandJack.com/Amazon.
I knew it. I just
We're going to give your spot away to Janelle Maloney for providing these Amazon ads. Now that she's talking, she's got a lot to say.
But I could do that part.
Again, very, very thankful that Mike's joining the show this season.
Well, then he should do the Amazon thing.
No. Come on.
JandJack/Amazon.
No, JandJack.com.
Oh, JandJack.com/Amazon.
Falsified information.
Nobody's ever
go to my
use
personal account.
All right. That will do it for this episode.
JandJack.com/Amazon.
After the first. Mike, you do a lot of podcasts. Where can other people hear you?
You can follow me on Twitter @AMikeBloomType. That's the best place to keep track of all the shenanigans that I do. But just to talk briefly about something that Jay mentioned at the very beginning, I'm happy to be bringing some Fargo coverage to Jay and Jack, myself, and Jeremiah Panhorst, who's a great podcaster in his own right. He covered Mad Men extensively back in the day. Big fan of Fargo as well. At the time of recording this, we're going to put out a little preview chit-chat about season 3. Coming out later this week, but we'll be covering them usually on Thursdays, and we'll give out some more information about that, but I'm very excited to be covering that exclusively for Jay and Jack. Outside of that, I do SNL podcasts, RuPaul's Drag Race, other reality show stuff as well, but just check it out on my Twitter. I give out all the information there.
Beautiful. All right. Jack, where can people find you? Nobody cares.
Somewhere on the street, somewhere, I don't know. I'm wandering. I hear myself mumbling, Amazon, Jay and Jack, Amazon. People go, this guy's crazy. Get away from Amazon.
Also, Jack's really good at vague booking, so you just got to check out his Twitter. It's just, it's like there's Rupert and then there's Jack. It's just, his tweets are fantastic.
Can't tell if he's frozen or if he's just he's not frozen.
Those tweets are amazing.
All right. That will do it for this episode. We'll see you guys next time. Hasta luego and goodbye. Bye.